Hello and welcome to Trillennial Horrors. This is an episode that we've been putting off making, and honestly, it's probably half the reason we've been making so few episodes over the last few months, or like a year. I don't know why it's been so off-putting, but I feel like this episode has been hanging over our heads. But here we are. We're going to do it. It's zombie time. Like the early 2000s, zombies were just everywhere. Obviously, there's the films that we're going to get to. But then there was like that Max Brooks book, The Zombie Survival Guide, which was published in 2003, was just everywhere, just weirdly ubiquitous. I think at one point I had three copies of it because people kept giving it to me.
I don't think I've ever actually owned it. I had World War Z.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. I think I've charity shopped them all. I read it, like the first one I got, and I definitely had loads of those conversations where it's like, oh, what would you do in the zombie apocalypse? Like, what's your plan? That we seem to be having all the time when I was a student, I guess, because it was like 2003, 2004, 2000, that kind of time. We can probably kind of blame Robert Kirkman as well, because his series, The Walking Dead, the comic, kicked off in 2003. And then he also did Marvel Zombies in 2005. Basically, just zombies were everywhere. Like, if we have any Gen Z listeners and not just nostalgic millennials, like the degree to which zombies were everywhere, like, I can't overstate it. It was like bacon. Like, knowing your zombie survival plan is as much an integral part of the millennial experience as like being told to stop eating avocado toast. and now it's like, I don't want to go back. It like kind of feels embarrassing. Like, I don't know. It's not that I hated these, like, I liked some of these films at the time, so I was sort of reluctant to go back in case I hated them now. But we're here, we've watched them, we've done it, so let's go. Do you want to kick off with 28 Days Later?
Yeah, so 28 Days Later, I do feel like this is probably, if not the one that kicked it all off, then, you know, it's definitely one of the core, kind of the pillars of the zombie boom, isn't it? Yeah, so the plot begins with a guy called Jim, who's played by Cillian Murphy, waking up 4 weeks after an outbreak of rage that is some kind of virus that is unleashed when a bunch of animal rights activists go into some kind of government facility or some kind of science facility in Cambridge and unleash a bunch of rage-infected monkeys, who I just feel so sorry for. But anyway, he wakes up from this coma and discovers that London is empty, or so it seems. Yeah, even though he thinks he's alone, he is definitely not, and the world has been completely changed. I remember this coming out and it being absolutely huge. Everyone watched 28 Days Later, I think. And I was too young to go and see it at the cinema, so I think I waited till the DVD came out. But I had friends who'd been to see it at the cinema and were talking about, oh my God, it's the scariest thing. Like, absolutely terrifying. Oh, like, I don't think you're ready for 28 Days Later.
I don't think you're not old enough.
Yeah.
It's an 18, isn't it?
It is an 18. It's weird. Like, it's nasty, but watching it now, like, it's so grainy. But sorry, what was your first encounter with 28 Days Later?
I actually can't remember. I don't think I saw it at the cinema. So I must have seen it on DVD, and I think I might have repressed this whole thing. like when I was rewatching it, I was just kind of thinking, like, I only remember sort of two things from it and the rest is just gone. Like, I just remember an overall impression of not enjoying it. And that was just it. But like you were about to say, it's so great. Like, why does it look like that? It's hideous.
It's kind of at the beginning of the digital boom, isn't it? Where just because we could start making films on cheap digital cameras, someone decided that we should. So everything's kind of very... Yes. It's extremely murky, and I remember seeing stills from it that look very clear, and then when you watch the movie, it's just, I think I saw on your letterbox kind of wondering whether it was because the DVD was naff, but I think it's always looked like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I was writing something for a book on film locations recently, and I was looking for like stills from 28 Days Later that showed various different locations around London, and I was like, why are all these images so crap? Like, there is like a weird black hole around movies from like the late 90s and early 2000s when you try and find stills from them, because I guess they just weren't put on the internet at the time. But like, I was like, God, everything looks really bad. I'd have to go and take my own screenshots or something. But yeah, it just looks like that. I think, yeah, you're right. I think there was like, I can't remember what the camera was. I think I looked it up. But yeah, it's because they wanted that like handheld, like super kinetic ability to, yeah, just like run around and do shots of things that maybe would be more difficult with the traditional setup. But it doesn't look good. Like you could film something. I guess it's shocking that technology has changed so much, because I feel like if you made a film on your iPhone right now, it would look better than this.
Oh, yeah, 100%. yeah, you watch something like Unsane or something like that where
yeah.
Everything looks so clear. But I don't know, I feel like it works in sort of fits and starts for me, the look of it. I think there's bits of the London sequence. I mean, the London sequence is still just great, where Jim's walking around a deserted city. And I think that's one of those ones where the story about how they made it is just as impressive as the actual sequence now. Where they just went out first thing in the morning before people got up, and while clubbers were still, they had to like kind of shoot around people like leaving clubs and stuff like that. But yeah, it's that. I think that there are sequences during the zombie attacks, especially early on. I think when you're still getting used to how fast the zombies are. So I think the one that really works for me is Jim meets a couple of survivors, one of them Selena, and I can't remember, who's played by Naomi Harris, and I can't remember the name of the bloke because he doesn't last very long. But they go to Jim's house, which I think is my favourite sequence in the whole film. They go to Jim's parents' house to try and find his parents. And there's a bit where it's in the middle of the night and the neighbours kind of burst through, and that all happens so quickly and it's so horrible. And I think it really works for me there. But then there's other bits of it where it's so muddy. It's just, I don't know. Maybe it would have been different on the big screen. It's one of those things that I'm not sure.
I feel like it's worse though, because even now, like watching it on a much bigger TV than I would have been watching it in like 2002, 2003.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, this is just like, do I have to unfocus my eyes to be able to accept that it's so many pixels? Or like not enough pixels, I guess, is the problem. I like that thing where they go back to his parents. In fact, I think what I really like about this film, let's be generous first, I really like the idea of going with someone who has missed the entire start of the outbreak.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of like our way in, and everyone else keeps having to very patiently explain stuff to him. Like when he keeps being like, oh, I've got to go to my parents, and they're like, your parents are dead. Mm. And he's like, oh, they might not be. He's like, no, they are. Like everyone's dead, like there's going to be no point in doing this. I really, really like you say, the beginning bits with deserted London, obviously iconic for a reason. But I think the bit later on where they're driving up the motorway and that's all empty is also really good.
Yes. Like that's, yeah,
it's just that I mean, you can always get a cheap thrill out of like, here's a place that's normally busy but it's empty. But yeah, it's cool.
It is cool. I'd completely forgotten about that bit where they're just kind of out in the countryside.
Yeah,
that was kind of oddly wonderful. Yeah, and that's sort of like the last good bit of the film, really. But
it is the last good bit of the film. I think, yeah, I like, it does manage some really nice, quite poignant bits, like the note from his parents.
Oh,
yeah. Which I put on my letterbox so I can quote it, because it says, "With endless love, we left you sleeping. Now we're sleeping too. Don't wake up." That gives me a little like goosebumps
every time. It's so, yeah. Ugh. I remember that the first time I saw it, that really upset me, and it still does. Yeah. It's so good.
It is really good. Unlike a lot of other things in this film. So the other bit that I do like is like you say, the last bit, good bit of the film is when they're going up the motorway towards what they've heard is like going to be like a sanctuary or a safe place. And they sort of start having a bit of fun. Like, there's Jim and Selena and Hannah and Frank. And like, in spite of everything, there's a bit of just like that way that, you know, as we've seen in the last few years, even in the midst of like really horrible things, like you still have a sense of humour, you still enjoy being with your family and friends. Like there's, they just have a little moment of like being sort of happy.
Yeah.
Like on the journey. And that hurts so much when you know what's coming, which is this like fucking Christopher Eccleston turning up and everything going to shit.
Yeah.
I hate this film from then on. Like, I hate it. It's just so... So basically, yeah, what happens when our heroes get out of London and travel to... I can't even remember what part of this country it's meant to be in. But they meet up with this, like, group of military guys who are in, like, the building they can defend. I feel like it's a country house of some kind, but am I misremembering? But, like, the military guys are so horrible. And I guess that is a point. Like, men who are in the military are probably going to be... I feel like I have to be really careful about what I'm saying, because I don't mean to stereotype a massive group of guys, but, like, you know, these guys are supposed to be, like, trained killers, so their levels of empathy are not existent. But it just gets so rapey so fast.
Yeah.
And just stays just this horrible, like, oppressive misogyny to this section. And I know it's coming from the characters, but, like, the film just becomes so, like nihilistic and just like people are horrible and people will always be horrible and you can't trust anyone. And, I mean, I guess the whole film is about that, because the whole thing is just about rage and what it does to people and how it turns people into unthinking, violent nightmares. But, like, it's just uncomfortable to watch.
Well, yeah, and also there's that whole thing about how Jim has to become a rage infected, basically, in order to save Selena and Hannah. And, yeah, it just all... I just don't think any of it works in the third section. And, you know, I love Christopher Eccleston, and I think he's, you know, he's fine in this. I don't think it's one of his best performances, but he's, you know, he's creepy and odd in a very kind of practical, authoritarian, I know what the best thing to do is kind of way. And looking at if I explain it practically, then doesn't that make it right? But yeah, it's just, it really feels like, I remembered it going bad in the third act, but actually there's lots of wobbles earlier on that I'd forgotten about, where people are just doing stupid stuff to make a point in the film. Like the bit where Jim wanders off when they're on the way, because they stop at a petrol station and there's a line about, like, we don't have cheeseburgers. So he goes in after having made a point about how going through a tunnel is a really bad idea. He goes into a deserted petrol station by himself so he can kill a child, basically. That's like the plot reason for it. Yeah, there's just lots of things like that where it feels like they sort of had the ideas and the themes of the movie, but once they got out of London, they didn't know what to do with it. Like killing Frank. Obviously, you have to kill Frank because he's dad, and dad can't survive in a zombie apocalypse. And if Frank's alive, then you need him out of the way in order for the military section to work.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an upsetting scene, and Brendan Gleeson does it. Still upsets me watching him rage out.
Yeah,
because he's so lovely in it.
I hate that bit, and I can't articulate why I hate it so much, but the fucking, like, drop of blood from a bird, like, I hate it. it goes in, like, it's so stupid, the way he gets infected. I hate it so much. I just violently hate it. It's so spiteful. This film has really got, like, a horrible edge to it, and that, like, it's just really misanthropic. And, like, and I guess I was talking to my husband about it and being like, you know, well, I guess maybe it's got a point. I don't necessarily disagree with his points, but the way it makes them is so unpleasant to me. And he's like, well, just because it's misanthropic doesn't mean it's intelligent. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. Like I say, like, there is that one moment of, like, happiness with the little gang of survivors before they encounter the military guys. But, like, that just kind of exists to get snuffed out, not because...
Yeah.
This film believes that there's anything salvageable about humanity, I don't think.
No, and it feels like... Alex Garland is, like, a filmmaker I like a lot of the time, and this does have that feeling of, it wasn't his first screenplay, I don't think. I think he wrote The Tesseract, but it's got that feeling of, I don't want to say like university level, like...
No, but I know what you mean.
Like kind of up late talking about how the world is fucked. Like yeah. 3 a.m., like many drinks in, someone's had this thought before and had this conversation before, and they're going to explain it to you in a way that makes you feel miserable.
Yeah.
And I think he goes on to explore the themes about humanity and, yeah, kind of how we're all doomed much, much better later on. And this kind of feels like a, I don't know, maybe he needed to get this one out of the way so he could figure out, oh no, actually what I want to say is this.
Didn't have to put it out into the world though, did he? Could have just put the draft back in the drawer. Yeah.
Or just written the second half again. Like it's...
Yeah. I just don't enjoy this film. And I've never even bothered to watch 28 Weeks Later, so I don't know if that addresses any of the problems that we have with this or if it's worse or anything. I've just had no interest in ever watching it.
See, I like 28 Weeks Later. I've not watched it in a while. It's also incredibly bleak.
Yeah. Well, it's a zombie movie. Well, asterisk.
Yeah. It's also, 28 Weeks Later is also a film that kills off basically everyone you like in it, and is in quite cruel ways. It's the 28 Weeks Later follows two kids trying to get out of kind of re-rage infected London, and basically everyone who shows up to help them along the way gets horribly murdered along the way by Robert Carlyle mostly.
Oh no. It's not what you want.
But yeah, but it's got a structure, I think, 28 Weeks Later, which really helps. And again, the first scene in 28 Weeks Later is absolutely fantastic. And it's a horror thing I still think about a lot. It starts with Robert Carlyle and Catherine McCormack and some other survivors in a house in the countryside. And basically, the rage infected get in. And there's a moment where Robert Carlyle gets out first and sees that his wife's in trouble and has to decide whether to go back for a runaway, and in the moment decides to run away and is getting chased all the way to the river. And it's really tense and scary and upsetting. So yeah, I think I might actually prefer 28 Weeks Later to this one.
Well, because 28 Days Later is weirdly unavailable like anywhere on that you can't buy it digitally, you can't stream it anywhere, I had to buy the DVD, and I did somehow accidentally buy a double pack, so I could watch 28 Weeks Later. I don't know if I will. Question mark. Yeah, so the thing that I guess we haven't quite addressed is that, are we being naughty by including this in our zombie episode? I mean, I feel like it is part of the whole zombie resurgence, even though they obviously don't use the word. But then Romero doesn't use the word in Night of the Living Dead, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, are they... How do, like, rage infection, you don't have to die and come back, do you? You just become like a mindless beast.
Yeah, and there's no cure for it either. And it's essentially the same thing with zombies, where they might starve to death, but it's going to take a long, long time. And it is so, you know, Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead. And very John Wyndham. I'd forgotten quite how, like, Day of the Triffids it is. Because I was looking at the trivia, and Alex Garland did say that the Day of the Triffids thing, where the guys had surgery on his eyes, so he misses the meteor shower, and that's why he's not infected.
Oh, wild. I'm not that up on my Wyndham, clearly. That's interesting.
But yeah, I think it counts as zombie. I think that was such a huge argument among a certain group of people in the noughties, wasn't it?
And now I'm like, who cares? Yeah.
Like, rage.
Well, zombies, like, as we're going to see, like, zombies just completely changed from what they were. And zombies feel like such an easy monster to map any kind of political point onto that you feel like. So, yeah. I'm gonna say they count. I do think, again, like, it's really weird watching any kind of like outbreak type storyline in our post 2020 world. It's just very, very strange.
Yeah, it really is.
Just watching the way people react and the way like the world changes, and just being like, yeah, well, that was bang on, but not that bit so much. And yeah,
the streets were empty, but the government was still there.
Yeah, unfortunately. but yeah, I also think that having seen all of these films definitely informed my early pandemic experience and made me much more paranoid than I otherwise might have been. But yeah. So from this one to a film that is definitely a zombie film, 2004's Dawn of the Dead, which is obviously a remake of the 1978 Romero film. So zombie outbreak, a bunch of people go to a shopping mall to hide out and shenanigans ensue. So this one is written by James Gunn and directed by Zack Snyder, which now is like, oh, it's basically like a DC superhero movie then. I think I did see this in the cinema. I've just got like, I don't know, some of these films, I think it's because I like saw them, didn't really like them, and then just didn't think about them ever again. So like my memories of them is like, meh. I will say that watching Dawn of the Dead again now, I thought the beginning part at least was much better than I expected. But then it did kind of go downhill.
Yeah, the opening is, I guess a bit like 28 Days Later. The opening's brilliant, with Sarah Polley trying to get out of suburbia and the bit with the little zombie girl.
Yeah.
I think it just made me think of Anna and the Apocalypse now.
Yeah. The visuals are really similar, aren't they? Just that suburban town with everything on fire.
But yeah, once they hit them all, I remembered loving this when it came out, which I guess shouldn't really be a surprise because it does feel like it's targeting teenage boys pretty heavily.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So yeah, I didn't see it at the cinema. I think I probably saw it on a naughty download and I loved it. It's really gory. It's super violent. Ving Rhames is in it. So I think... I was just smack bang in the middle of its target audience. Watching it now, I like it a lot less. Yeah. Apart from the beginning. The beginning still rocks.
The beginning's really good. Yeah. I really like the whole stuff of just her in the hospital. We probably could have stayed in the hospital and had the outbreak there, but we don't. We follow her home to her husband. And then, the little girl wandering into their house and then that whole sequence where she escapes through the bathroom with her husband zombieing out. And, it's really nice. And then the whole bit where she's, driving and her windscreen gets smashed and that shot is just kind of on her peeling out through the neighbourhood with the smashed windscreen. It's a really nice shot. Well done, Zack Snyder.
He's got a good eye. He does have a good eye.
Yeah.
And then the Johnny Cash title sequence is great. Man comes around. Gotta love it.
I'm not a fan of needle drops anymore. I think there's just there's a lot of the musical choices in this film where I'm like, oh really? Like the Down with the Sickness thing. No, don't hate it.
That one's so stupid that I do kind of like it.
Yeah.
But I think there's some needle drops in Zack Snyder's Justice League that were so on the nose that I think retroactively I've started to dislike some of the ones in this movie as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And in Watchmen as well.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Hallelujah. Yeah. I'd forgotten how sickly the colour palette is. It's so heavily filtered. And I think when I was a kid watching this on a naughty download, I assumed I was watching it on a dodgy download. Whereas actually watching it in high definition now, I realise,
that's what it looks like.
Just what it looks like.
That's very funny that we've the first two films we've watched have been like, is it really supposed to look like this?
Yes. This was a choice.
Oh dear. Yeah, this was a choice.
But yeah, I think it's got a similar sort of nihilism to 28 Days Later, doesn't it? Where people are dicks just some of them might not be as much of an asshole as they appear to be.
Well, it's sort of a similar thing in that, when we get to the shopping mall and there's all the security guards, it's any time we run into men who pre-apocalypse were in positions of, authority and in a potentially sort of violent way. Mm. As soon as the shackles of society are gone because of zombies, they're just going to fucking fuck up anyone they feel like. They're just off the leash. Mm. It's very simplistic how this film like separates out like these are the good guys and these are the bad guys. Like the good guys are all trying to like help each other and like welcome other people into their group and like, you know, support each other. And then the bad guys are like, nope, this is our place. Get out.
Yeah.
And I sort of like that from a, you know, looking at the world and, you know, kind of xenophobia that we have now, like it is telling you like to be a good person you have to welcome in other people, even if you are going to have to help them and they can't immediately offer you something of value. Like that's all quite nice, but again it does play into that kind of misanthropic thing of like most people are bastards.
Yeah, and I guess thinking about like, you know, the actively horrible people are all white, I think, in this movie.
Yes. Yeah.
White men who've got guns for one reason or another. But it's also, you know, it is very, guns are awesome, we love guns. And as a teenager, I was like, yeah. And now I'm like, yeah, less cool.
Yeah. Another thing that I do really like is, I think a couple of these films do this, is the way that you have to separate out how you feel about zombies from how you feel about the people that they used to be, in a way. Like you have to dehumanize zombies. Mm. And depending on what the metaphors are that you're playing with, that's disturbing to a greater or lesser degree. But I like in this that there's like a Tom Savini cameo where he calls a zombie a twitcher and all the mall security guys are like, yeah, twitcher, mm. we're going to say that. And that felt very sort of like Twitter Gamergate-y, like we're just going to pick up on this language that completely disregards someone else's humanity. And like, I don't know, there was like a little seed of an idea in there that I thought, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and the same with when they're shooting the celebrity lookalike zombies.
Yes.
Which is definitely played for laughs and is, you know, it's teeing up what's going to happen to a couple of characters later on. But yeah, I like that, you know, Sarah Polley says like, you guys all had really fucked up childhoods, didn't you, or something like that.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think it's just what my main problem, or well, not my main problem, but one of my problems with it is similarly just once they hit the mall, it doesn't really have a huge amount to say in the same way that Dawn of the Dead does, but it's just as long. And they just kind of, I don't know. I don't care enough about any of the characters really to care about how they might or might not change during this lockdown period. And they don't really, they're just kind of more people show up and then occasionally someone breaks in or like they need to go out for some reason. It really stalls for me quite quickly. Yeah, and I just find it quite boring. And so, because I don't really care about anyone, some of the violence seems quite unpleasant.
That point you made about it being geared towards teenage boys, I think is really bang on. And actually might have clarified part of my issue with 28 Days Later as well, and that I think they are both really male perspective. And I think that's why in both of them, whenever it gets to something that's about like gendered violence, so in 28 Days Later, it's about the threat of rape towards the girls. And in this one, it's the whole zombie baby thing. I think that's why it feels so uncomfortable to me, because the films are not getting into the perspective of the woman who's in danger. Like it feels like the perspective is the male perspective. So, you know, we're sort of seeing it through Jim's, like not completely, but it does feel like it's like Jim's perspective of like he's got to save them, he's got to protect them. And in this one with the zombie baby, like it, like that whole bit, it really upsets me. And I think partly this is like a getting older thing, like, you know, when I watched this in my early 20s and it like didn't bother me as much. And yeah, so that kind of plays into that like teenage thing of like just not feeling the empathy for it. But like that whole bit, because we're seeing it through the perspective of the husband who kind of wants to save the baby, wants to, you know, he's tied up his partner who's become a zombie.
Yeah.
But he's still trying to kind of save the baby, and that's horrifying. But like, yeah, it just takes her out of the equation. Whereas like, God, if you think about that idea of like being pregnant and then having been infected with something that you know is going to kill you, possibly kill your unborn baby, like that's some really nasty body horror in that, I think, from her, like, if you were in her head, but you never are.
No.
So we have to, like, kind of knock her out quite quickly. Like, she's a zombie. She doesn't have a brain anymore. We're not going to worry about that. We're just going to kind of do it for the man and then sort of play it for laughs a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's, there is, like, a whole, this movie, I think, has some ew, kind of.
yeah.
kind of vibe to it with a lot of the, like, there's the, like, the obese zombie and stuff like that. Just,
yeah.
Yeah, and there's very, like, I know James Gunn kind of came up through Troma and,
yeah.
I think Slither, which I've not seen for a long time, has a bit of that as well.
I suspect Slither doesn't hold up at all, yeah. Oh, God, we have to put that on our list.
But, yeah, it's, yeah, it is the extremely teenage, don't think about it, just show how gross this thing is, and it's mostly to the women, isn't it? It's the obese women, pregnant women.
Yeah, but, like, I think there's oh God, there's so much to talk about with how horror movies, like, nowadays as well, treat, like, older women's bodies. That's a really, really horrible trend that we're bang in the middle of at the moment. There's a montage early in the mall stuff where, like, there's just scenes of sort of characters, like, milling about and just sort of playing, and I'm sure there's a bit with, like, a guy, like, trying on women's shoes, which again is sort of played for, like,
yeah,
like horrible teenage boy laughs. It all just feels so mean. It just feels mean and horrible.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I remember, like, suggesting it to watch with my partner during the pandemic, and I just remembered it. I hadn't seen it since I was a teenager, and I remembered it just being fun. Yeah. And it's not fun really at all.
No, it's not fun.
Not watching it now.
No, yeah. Horrible. And I do think both of these films have lost the real horror of zombies for me. Like, maybe this is something we'll talk about when we've talked about all four, but, like, I think both of these films just kind of collapse the idea of a zombie into just, like, a predator. Like, this is just a thing that's going to run and eat you, which I don't think is the full spectrum of why zombies are so scary. Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
But yeah, so 2004, Dawn of the Dead, and also Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
This is the one I was most nervous about revisiting. Like, I just, pretty much the other three, I had this feeling that, like, I didn't like them very much anyway, so I felt like they weren't going to disappoint me. Like, I didn't want to watch them again because I felt like I didn't like them. So I was like, oh, it's just going to be an endurance test. But Shaun of the Dead, like, I loved, like everyone else in the world. But so I was like, oh God, what if I watch it and it's bad? So Shaun of the Dead. Do you remember how much of a big deal they made out of the whole, like, rom-zom-com thing?
Rom-zom-com, yeah.
So, like, oh, we're doing something really wacky.
I've forgotten
here,
about that, but yeah, that phrase was everywhere, wasn't it? Well, I mean, in relation to Shaun of the Dead, but yeah, all over the marketing.
It's a shame, in a way, that zombie comedy has become such a thing. I feel like the romance angle's pretty much died off. There's no rom-com, but it really is. So the plot of Shaun of the Dead is that 29-year-old slacker Sean gets dumped by his girlfriend just before the zombie apocalypse. And so over the course of the film, he's trying to win her back and prove to her that he can be a competent grown-up while fighting zombies. So written by Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright and directed by Edgar Wright. So this is very much like the Spaced crew doing a movie that it feels... I mean, I guess Spaced sometimes felt very cinematic. Mm. It does have that kind of slight feel of like a British TV show, I think, just because it's those guys. But, like, you know, it translates to the... I was going to say the big screen. translates to being a film pretty well. I still liked it.
Yeah, me too.
Yay! I did kind of have the thing of, like, when I was watching it, like I say, like, the other two I watched, like, once and then tried to forget about them. This one I watched a bunch of times.
Oh, yeah, same, yeah.
So it was a degree of just kind of feeling like I was just settling into something very familiar. Like, I didn't really find... I don't think there are any surprises. I was just like, oh, yeah. I like this film. I'm comfortable here.
Yeah, same. I think I'd forgotten... It had been quite a few years since I'd watched it. I think maybe since oh, maybe since uni, actually. But yeah, I watched it pretty obsessively when I was younger. And yeah, it still really made me laugh. I think I was surprised by how funny so much of it still was. And from a different perspective as well now, I guess. Like, I'm older than 29 for sure.
Right? Like, the first time I watched this is probably, I was like much younger than the characters. Yeah. And so being like, oh yeah, you're on the brink of 30. Like, yeah, you should just sort your life out. And now I'm like, oh my God, you're babies.
Seriously. Oh, but
like, why are you so stressed about this? It's like, still in your 20s, for fuck's sake.
Go to the pub, it's nice. Yeah, you're gonna miss getting out of the house.
Yeah, how aspirational now does that feel? Oh. The idea of going to the pub with your friends all the time.
Yeah.
And partly this is our fault because both of us have moved away from everywhere we previously had a life, I guess. Like,
this is true.
I think these are the kind of friendships that they have in this movie are like the kind of friendships you can only have if you haven't like left the place where you grew up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is like, oh, it'd be so nice to have a regular group of pals, even though they all like don't really like each other. But yeah.
I think luckily, and yeah, I'm glad I don't have housemates at the moment. Like, and yeah.
Yes.
I don't miss that. But it was, there was still like something very nostalgic now about like going out and getting wrecked with your housemate and coming back and like doing something stupid at 2 a.m.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like that whole lifestyle that they have does feel very studenty, I guess. Like,
yeah.
That's the last time that I lived in that world where, yeah, I lived with my friends and, yeah, could go out and get drunk. And like, not because I'm so rich and fancy that I've been able to afford to live by myself, but because I moved away from where I went to university and lived with people I didn't know. So
yeah,
it wasn't the same experience of like, yeah, living with your pals and staying up all night playing Resident Evil or whatever.
But yeah, I guess it does, I think it manages the shift from kind of sitcom into zombie outbreak movie just so neatly. I think the third act has problems, like 20 Days Later does. Not in the same way, but just in a sort of, I think I had quite a lot of friends who really didn't like the end of Shaun of the Dead when it gets quite bleak.
Oh.
And I just don't, watching it now, I don't think it manages it quite as successfully as the rest of the movie.
Mm.
I think because it feels like, oh, it's a zombie movie, so we do need to get dark.
Mm. However, we've already brought up Anna and the Apocalypse, which I really struggle with the ending of that film.
Oh, really? I really liked
Good
it in that.
Good Lord, it's bleak.
Yeah. It makes me sad, but I think it works really well there.
It's devastating, though. Because, like, you're just watching, like, a nice, fun little zombie comedy musical thing, and you like all these characters, and then you're just like, ah, you're all fucked and you're all going to die if you're not already dead. I think it's the point where her best friend gets bitten that I was just like, oh, shit, now I don't like this anymore. I'm not having fun anymore. I don't like it.
Oh, it's the couple for me. I can't remember what any of them are called now, the Apocalypse, but...
And it's really weird. When I started this, I had Anna and the Apocalypse in my head. I can't remember why, but yeah, now it's... Yeah.
Just going to have to watch Anna and the Apocalypse again.
Yeah. It is the logical like descendant of Children of the Dead. I really like how much really almost obnoxious foreshadowing there is at the beginning of this film.
Oh, so much foreshadowing.
Like,
yeah.
So much. Like, Peter Serafinowicz's character, I think, says like, go and live in the shed to Ed. Like, if you want to live like an animal, go live in the shed. And it's like, oh, yeah, because that's where he's going to end up. Yeah, yeah. The fact that Ed ends up a zombie but Sean's still hanging out with him is, I don't know. There's a lot of emotions there, mixed emotions.
Now I think I quite like the fact that it does do, I don't think it handles the darkness as well as maybe it handles a lot of the rest of the film, but I do really respect it for having such a silly, goofy, happy ending. And that feels like the kind of thing that they might not do now. It seems like, ah, no, like, come on, it's a comedy, so let's have a happy ending, kind of.
But in a way, it's kind of quite insightful into the British psyche, because isn't that what we've done with COVID? Just kind of pretend that everything's normal again.
Yeah.
Like the way that the UK just kind of like integrates zombies into its everyday life and just goes, yeah, well, we're just going to carry on. Like that feels like, yeah, that was bang on.
I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
The other thing that really, really, really struck me on this watch that obviously I wouldn't have had the first time around is that Penelope Wilton's character, Sean's mom, is my mother-in-law. Like that, everything she does, I'm like, that is my mother-in-law. She is exactly like that. Like if she got bitten by a zombie, she would not mention it to anyone because she wouldn't want to bother them. Yep,
that's very my family as well.
It's just uncanny. I was just watching it by myself and I was just like calling my husband and going, that's your mum. It's just weird. It just captures that kind of like generation, I guess. That yeah. Just everything about how Sean talks to her about his stepdad, like it's all so similar to my mother-in-law and stepfather-in-law. Like it's note perfect. So I think, you know, points to Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright for their really good characterization of just really, I feel like they really understand their characters.
Definitely. And I think watching it now again, like Bill Nye's character as well, the Sean's stepdad, you can kind of see that he's trying with when he shows up at the at Sean's work, and there's like a moment where like he looks at him again. And when I first watched it, I was like, oh, it's because he doesn't like him. And watching it now, it's like, oh, it's because he feels like he wants to say something nice, but can't.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, actually, that's just such a nice little moment of humanity to give to a character who's essentially a punchline until he gets that nice little moment with Sean in the car after he's been bitten. But Bill Nye is so, so good in this.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? They've cast some really, great performers in this film that are going to give you, you know, nuance.
Yeah, it's the way he says, what is it, like, not a cheap bunch of poses from a garage forecourt.
Wasn't gonna. Oh, it's so, but like that as well, like the way that like interacting with your parents just immediately turns you back into a teenager.
Yeah, completely.
Like it's the way Sean regresses when, it's really smart. I do think, like, this is what's been nice about doing this podcast sometimes, is like watching films back with adult brain
instead
of a teenager brain, where I'm like, I'm having emotions about these guys. But yeah, when they say Sean's 29, I'm just like, oh my god.
Yeah, his reaction to when Jessica Hines pops up and says she's bought a house, and he's like, bought?
Yeah,
it's like, yeah. Have that reaction every time someone moves. I was a bit worried that it would feel dated in a way that, I don't know, like, I've not watched Spaced for a long time, but like I worry about things that have like Matrix references in and stuff like that, where it dates it. But actually, maybe because it's basically just doing zombie movies and rom-coms, so specifically, it really doesn't feel like it's aged that much. I mean, the phones are different.
Yes. Yeah, I really noticed that. 2004 was a different time.
Yeah. But yeah, like it feels weirdly fresh. And I think a lot of that's, you know, it's not as Edgar Wright-y as some Edgar Wright movies, but all those little visual gags, like I can't remember who Sean's talking to in the shop. It might be Bill Nye, but I think it's Rafe Spall, actually, who is, I love Rafe Spall's little performance and his lip licking in this. He's so weird. Buying a bunch of flowers for your mum. Like gags like phones coming in from the side of the screen just still really make me laugh.
Yeah,
it's just, yeah, there's so much energy to it, and it's clearly such a labor of love for them.
Yeah,
but like you said, it wouldn't work if the characters weren't so good.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say. Like, I think if you write your character, you really understand your characters and you write them really well, like, it's not that it doesn't date, because obviously it is a film from 2004, but like, it still works. You can still watch it and relate to it and feel those things, even if you're like, well, but I would use my iPhone to do this.
Yeah. But our Google Maps, like, route or something like that.
Yeah. But then, like, but I could imagine how, you know, like, how my mother-in-law doesn't understand how to use phones. Like, it would be a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
It would just be a whole different set of problems. I'm really glad that this still worked.
Same. It was such a relief. I think this is the, of the films we've covered, this is the only one I think where I bought the DVD when it came out and I've kept that DVD.
Yes, same. Oh my God, the animated menus.
Yes, yeah, amazing.
There's so much stuff on there and you're like, oh, if anything is dated about this, it's an O-ring and it has animated menus and it has like, you can put like little commentary things on and
yeah. It's got a trivia track, yeah. I think, and there's like five commentaries and yeah, lovely stuff.
Some things were nice in the past.
Yeah.
Not many, but some things.
I know we literally just said it, but like the relief of this still being really funny and good was just, I would have been so sad if this was like, oh no, Shaun of the Dead's a bit shit now.
Yeah, I know. I had my Last Night in Soho Blu-ray like queued up, ready to go in case I needed to like watch that afterwards to kind of be like, yeah, but look, this is good.
See, that one I didn't really like.
Oh, did you not? I really loved it. I'm going to watch it. I haven't actually watched it yet, but I'm going to. It's in my near future. I hadn't remembered, even though I have watched all the Scream films recently, but like your point on the notes about they're watching it in Scream 4.
Yeah. Yeah, that was just so sweet. I think at the time, because everyone loves Based and this was such a huge success, it was actually really like exciting to see that like, oh, American like horror legends love Shaun of the Dead as well. It felt weirdly like a sort of, this is a good thing for British horror, yay.
But like even stuff like, I remember like I think there must be something in a special feature about how they did the effect of the girl in the garden when she like falls onto pole, the girl zombie, and like stands up and you see through her, like the kind of death becomes her effect. But that still looks good. That looks great. I was expecting it to maybe not, but it did.
Yeah, that looks fantastic. Yeah. Oh, that's such a great shot. And then he like, when he's winding the camera to the next picture. And also it's funny because I was wondering if having Spaced references in it would date it as well, but I think because I love Space so much, that just still makes me happy that Peter Serafinowicz does the, like, Dom, hi, kind of reference and stuff like that. He's brilliant. His commitment to being just out of the shower for, like, the whole rest of the film is wonderful as well.
Yes. Yeah. It really feels like an old friend.
Yeah, film. Completely.
I'm okay with it. Like, as much as I said at the beginning, you know, I don't want to go back to that time. Like, this one, I was like, okay, I can go back to this. Yeah. This is good. Okay, and then that brings us to our final zombie film of this episode, which is Land of the Dead. And I think my reluctance to watch this one was like, I really remembered being really disappointed by it. So I was just like, oh, I don't want to. Written by George Romero, directed by George Romero, the fourth part in the Romero zombie series, supposed to be like the zombie films. Okay, so in plot-wise, the zombie apocalypse now is well and truly underway. Like, people have adapted to it and learned to live with it. There are sort of little camps or, like, I guess little outposts across America, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania is one of those because the quirk of geography of where the rivers are and everything, it's quite easy to defend. So there is this luxury tower block where all the rich people live and are managing to have relatively similar lives to the ones they would have had before the outbreak, whereas everyone else is scrabbling around in post-apocalyptic nightmares below. And everything would kind of probably just carry on as normal, but unfortunately, the zombies are evolving and becoming intelligent.
Yeah.
So I guess what's kind of interesting about all of these films is how they portray their zombies, and I don't know if it's I don't know what this says about us, but the film that we liked the most is the one with the most traditional zombies in it. We're like, nope, we're not changing them. We're keeping them as they were. I remember watching this and being just not liking it at all. I saw it in Cardiff. I remember the cinema. I can remember the feeling of sitting in the cinema way more than I can remember the film. I just remember being gutted.
Aww.
And never ever wanting to watch it again. How about you? Are you more affectionate towards it than me?
I am, yeah. I went to see it at the cinema and had a lovely time.
Oh, yay.
And then I hadn't seen it for a while, but it came out, it got reissued on Blu-ray by one of like Fabulous Films or something like that. So I bought it and watched it like a couple of years ago, I think, maybe last year. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I still like it a lot. I think zombie movies have third act problems. But I have a lot of time for Land of the Dead and I still really enjoy it. I think it's patchy, but I think there's some really good stuff in it and I like the ideas and I like some of the performances. And yeah, I think it's, I don't know, it still works for me. There's still bits that surprise me and yeah, no, I'm a fan.
Okay. Which performances do you like? Is it John Leguizamo?
Obviously, it's primarily John Leguizamo. Yeah, he is wonderful. So John Leguizamo plays Cholo, who is right-hand man, kind of, to our boring lead, Riley Denbo, played by Simon Baker. God,
yeah. What is wrong with that man's face? That it's just like a blank face.
It doesn't move, does it?
It's just nothing there. It's like, there's nothing going on in that head.
No, it's a mask. There's nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Cholo has his eyes on getting into Cabrini Green and is knocked back by Dennis Hopper because he's lower class, essentially. I just decides to steal the rocket truck.
As you do. I don't know if you did that on purpose, but you called it Cabrini Green. Instead of
Fiddler's Green, isn't it?
It's kind of the opposite of Cabrini Green, I guess. Like Cabrini Green is like a horrible place that you don't want to end up. Fiddler's Green is the aspirate. Well, you know, horrible but aspirational.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, I thought that. I was thinking about that when I looked at the name of it, and I was thinking, I wonder if there's some resonance in there somewhere. But yeah,
I was typing Cabrini Green when I was doing the notes earlier, and I was like, no, Fiddler's Green.
Yeah, he's good. I think, again, the understanding of women and women's perspectives is rather lacking. And we get Asia Argento showing up as like a bad girl, essentially. Yeah. Like, what is her character?
Yeah, she's not great and her character is bad.
Yeah, it's just like the characters feel very, very basic. It's like, here is your very bland hero, he good man. Mm-hmm. Here is your big baddie with just Dennis Hopper, who's bad man. And like, I don't know. And then, yeah, John Leguizamo does a good job. But then it doesn't feel like a stretch for him. This feels like a role that he can play in his sleep.
Yeah, agreed. I think I've just always got time for him.
Yeah.
And I think he's got some bits of business that I really enjoy. And I do like Dennis Hopper in this as well. I know, like, there are times where he looks like he's basically asleep. But there's some, I think some of his line deliveries really make me laugh. The one I always think about, weirdly, is the bit where he's talking about how people are disposable and someone interrupts him. He just goes, like, you're interrupting me, Bill, and it's bad timing.
Yeah.
I do wonder if me liking this as much as I do is partly due to having seen so many other bad zombie movies.
Yeah.
And this feels like it does have a point and it does still feel George Romero, even though it's got a budget and it's studio financed. And I think he had a bit of a rough time with Universal with it, which is why he went and did Diary of the Dead for no money straight afterwards, pretty much.
I mean, Diary of the Dead is probably the worst.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
it's worse. But I think this is coming back to like me wanting zombies to mean something again. I really don't like how in this film they establish quite early on a bunch of zombies that you can then recognise because of like the props that they're holding.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there's just something that's just really ick about that. Like to kind of laugh about, like, you could do it in a good way where it's like, you know, this person happened to be doing something and it's really incongruous because now they're dead and scary, but like they were doing something quite goofy. But I think there's something about like the goofiness of them that I don't like. Like zombies are fucking terrifying because they're walking dead people. Like we are biologically programmed to be afraid of dead things. So there's that. There's the idea that like, someone like, you know, everyone that you love and you one day will become this just mindless decaying thing. Like that's the horror of it for me, is that the idea that like this is your inescapable fate, And that's scarier than it just being a predator that could just be, you know, like a lion or something. And I think sometimes there is this urge to make them funny. Obviously, Shaun of the Dead is a comedy, so that is a slightly different thing. It's not supposed to be that scary. But yeah, when you just make them just running, biting things, I think you lose the real kind of melancholy existential horror of what a zombie is. And so here, like, when they start to be able to communicate and plan, that feels really weird to me.
See, like, I like what happens with the zombies. I do get your point about it's kind of played for laughs sometimes. But I think I like... I can't remember what his name is. He's got a name, the zombie. The kind of the lead zombie. He's a gas station attendant. Big Benny, yeah. I love him. And I love his, like, expressive eyes and sorrowful howl. And I do feel like... I don't know, they work for me, the idea that they're basically being treated as kind of meat and target practice, and they've had enough. Yeah, that whole bit at the start where during the raid where Big Benny's trying to, like, basically get everyone moving because they're distracted by the sky flowers, the fireworks, and they're getting killed because they're not waking up properly. It's tricky because I think I agree it's not consistent. But yeah, there's something to the, like, if they'd just been left alone, then it would have all been fine.
Yeah, that is an interesting moral dilemma that kind of seems to start creeping into zombie films at some point, which is, like, to begin with, where it's like they are just dead things. So there's no, like, moral complexity to killing them because they're already dead. Like, they're not, you can't save them. Although, you know, as we see in, say, Shaun of the Dead, like, when it's his mum, like, he can't do it. Like, that's, but generally it's like, there's no, you're not a bad person if you kill a zombie, because a zombie is not a human. We start to see some things in some films and TV shows and stuff where zombies can kind of be cured, or they can, you know, I mean, curing them is really weird. I guess that comes in the 28 Days Later flavor of infected rather than dead, because if you can cure them, they can't have been dead. But if you can cure them, then that means if you've killed them, like, you are a murderer. And that's like
You've murdered someone,
a different thing. Starts to become like a different thing. But here, like, if the zombies can learn and become intelligent, then what does that, where does that put you if you're just merrily shooting them? And I think there is meant to be this horror of, like, the dehumanization is the horror, the ability to look at someone and not see a person, just see something to be killed, just see, target practice. That is horrifying. But we start to get into, like, but the real monsters are us, which is never my favourite trope.
I don't know. I think it seems like with Land of the Dead, it feels like the idea is not quite fully formed, in that it's obviously very post 9/11, and Dennis Hopper says we don't negotiate with terrorists at one point.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I think it was very modelled on, is it Dick Cheney? I think his character. But I think there's stuff with the sympathetic zombies who, you know, at the end of the movie, like, Simon Baker just kind of lets them have the city, basically, as they drive off to Canada. That stuff's a lot more interesting than the kind of social commentary about what's happening on the city, which is completely pretty much undeveloped, apart from, like, there's some kind of, like, Irish rebels.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's messy, but I find it's got a bit more heart to it, I think, than maybe 28 Days Later, although it is obviously incredibly violent and some of it feels gratuitous now, especially what happens to women in it. But yeah, I don't know. It's one of those ones where watching it, there's definitely patches where I'm like, oh, that's a bit naff, or like, oh, the plot's a bit repetitive, isn't it? And then half an hour later, I'm like, you know what? I quite like that movie.
I think I just found a big chunk of this quite boring.
Yeah, fair enough. It is one of those films where truck goes out.
Yeah.
Truck comes in, truck goes out, go get the truck.
Yeah.
What are we doing with the truck now?
Yeah. That thing that you said about like, you know, if you just don't bother them, there wouldn't have been a problem, is interesting, because I feel like you should, that's an idea that you probably should explore with other monsters. Like, it's a very, like, shark attack thing, or creature from the Black Lagoon, or, you know, anything where it's like, this thing was just existing in its own little place, and then people have gone in and now there's a problem. Whereas with zombies, it's like, well, they weren't just existing. We're going to have to figure out what to do with them and what happens to them. In Romeroverse, does everyone becomes a zombie when they die, right? I'm sure there's something in one of these movies about, like, a line like, where anyone who dies will become one of them, but, like, if they bite you, you'll just get there a lot quicker.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. But I think once you get bitten, you die, no matter where they bite you eventually. And it's been so long since I've seen Day of the Dead, because I remember not liking it when I first watched it. And now people say it's the best one, but...
Yeah.
So I can't really remember what goes on. I know there's Bub, the intelligent zombie. So yeah, I don't know how this fit. I think Land of the Dead doesn't neatly line up with canon. But yeah, but then again, it's got the... it's got that zombie that's you think is decapitated, and then it flips its neck up on the spine, and that's just so good. Love it.
Oh, and I'm sure there's a bit where, like, the Big Daddy zombie is, like, sad that one of the other zombies has been killed, or he puts a zombie out of its misery, kind of thing.
He does, yeah. It's so sad. He does such a good howl.
But, like, the mental gymnastics I have to do to understand what's going on in there, like, wait, but they're already dead, but now they're dead. What? Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, I think it's just, I find little bits, there's moments in Land of the Dead, like when they send up the fireworks and they're all just staring at them and it's just a bunch of dead people.
I do like kind the sky of flowers.
Looking up with their, like, soulful eyes. It's just, I think just moments like that is what I remember. This, I think, quite really effective and interesting.
Yeah. I really like, there's a lovely bit of, like, shadow gore of, like, a person getting their head pulled off, that you see it in silhouette.
Yeah.
That's very like Night of the Living Dead. That I really like that. There's moments, but I think, I just feel like if I, like, well, we have done, but, like, trying to explain the plot of this film, I just kind of, I feel like I just come up short, like, well, there's these guys. Like, what happens? What's the story?
Yeah, it feels like the plot was on the back burner while he had some themes that he wanted to explore.
Yeah. Well, that's, and then we've come all the way back around to 28 Days Later, where you're like, it's nice to have themes, but I would prefer to have characters in the story.
That's fair. Yeah, there aren't really characters in this movie at all.
No. Do you really remember what Simon Baker's character is called?
I do, because it's a silly name.
Yeah.
He's called Riley Denbo.
He is called Riley Denbo. Oh dear. So those are the, like, four zombie movies that we've picked. I feel like there are more around in the two, like, zombies literally were everywhere. Everything was zombies.
There's this whole second half of the decade that we didn't touch, really.
Are we gonna have to do that another time?
I think we'll have to do it another time. Yeah.
But at least we could do Pontypool, though.
Yeah, Pontypool for sure.
I can't remember what year that was. Oh, hang on. When does Wreck come out?
I think Wreck's 2007.
That'd be nice. It could do Wreck and Pontypool. That sounds like a much nicer episode than this one.
Yeah.
And also, we should say that we haven't included Resident Evil, which is another, like, probably really big part of the zombie resurgence. But I think we're saving that for computer game adaptations.
Yeah, video game adaptations. Resident Evil franchise must be discussed. I can see my Blu-ray box set from where I'm sitting at the moment.
You have a Blu-ray box set of Resident Evil?
I do.
That's incredible.
And I'll tell you why. We just started watching them during the pandemic. I think, I'm not sure we started with the first one, but I think one was on telly, and my partner and I just both realised that, just big comfort watches. And also, I think I can never remember which one's which. I think it's Resident Evil Retribution is actually really good. There's one which is set in cities, underground cities.
It's brilliant. I'm pretty sure I did a big rewatch project at one point, because in my head they were fun. And then I got a couple in and was like, I've made a mistake.
Yeah, yeah. Do not marathon them.
Because
they get very boring very quickly. They should be watched as like not watched Resident Evil in a while. It peaks with 5 and 6 for me, I think.
Okay, maybe that's our next episode. Maybe that's our next episode. So, do we have any more final thoughts on zombies?
I think just it's like you said, it's easy to forget now how everywhere they were.
Everywhere. Everything was fucking zombies.
Yeah. Like, I think if we do another, if we do like second half of the noughties, we'd get into like the zombie comedies where, oh, it's a zombie comedy with, but this is a zombie now.
Like, yeah.
All the arguments now about what's a zombie and what isn't now just seem pretty, like, what were people even getting upset about?
Doesn't it seem like we just must have had so much more time to argue about pointless shit?
It does.
How did they have the energy to still do that on Twitter, don't they? I'm going to put a poll on our Twitter about, like, running zombies and see if I can get any engagement at all.
I bet people still really care about it.
Well, we'll find out. Yeah, I think we have survived our zombie ordeal. And yeah, I guess we're going to now put ourselves through video game adaptations.
Woo.
I might live to regret this. In the meantime, yeah, as always, we are at TillennialHPod on Twitter or at Sarah Dobbs and at Jonathan Hatful. So you can tell us your thoughts, tell us that we're wrong, tell us if you still deeply care about zombies and if you still have a zombie survival plan. For the record, my zombie survival plan has always been immediately throw myself into the path of the nearest zombie and die because the post-apocalyptic world looks like hell. So on that cheerful note, yeah, we will be back soon. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Bye.